It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, our guests make the case for increasing funding for fundamental scientific research. They say it could pay off in terms of better treatment for many kinds of cancer.
Right now, we're continuing our series of candidate forums in the race for governor of Wisconsin.
While the race is mainly being framed as a close battle between Governor Walker and Democratic challenger Mary Burke, there are two third-party candidates on the ballot looking to shake things up.
We just heard from People's Party candidate Dennis Fear. Now we're turning to Robert Burke. He's the founder of the Libertarian Party of Pierce and St. Croix counties and is the Libertarian candidate for governor. He joins us today from our studio in Eau Claire. Robert, thanks so much for joining us.
Veronica and Rob, thank you very much for having me on. These radio opportunities are a great chance for people to hear about what we stand for and our ideas, and so we really appreciate the chance.
Well, Robert, we'll start out with our traditional first question here. Why are you running for governor?
I bring the most pragmatic understanding of the economics of not only our state but the country. I worked for 13 years as a financial services wholesaler. I've sat down with financial planners and with analysts and with small business owners, and I have a very good understanding of how wealth and success are built. But within that experience, I came across information and an understanding of the big problems within our economy and within our system. And I looked around at the red team, and I actually sat on the red team's, that's the Republican Party. I don't call them Republican and Democrat. Those two words mean something completely different than what those two parties stand for. I call them the red team and the blue team. I sat on the red team's platform committee in 2012. And I tried to enter language into our platform that said, look, Social Security is in severe distress and there are significant problems. And we need to include in our platform that this needs to be addressed because they're not doing anything at the national level. And the room went literally almost apoplectic over the idea that we would ever write that into a platform because, of course, we would lose the elections. And I wanted to know, at what point do we start telling the public the truth? When do we actually look the public in the eye and say, hey, you know what, the red team along with the blue team, yeah, we stole your Social Security. There's a lockbox and it's actually sitting in Washington, D.C. in an office, and it's a little filing cabinet that's got pieces of paper that say Social Security Treasury bonds, special Social Security Treasury bonds. They took your money and they moved it into the general budget, and then they spent it. And the only way they get that money back to pay for Social Security is either to print the money from the Federal Reserve or to borrow the money more from other governments and other agencies and investors. And neither of these are solutions that we should have to go to. We should have trillions of dollars sitting in reserves for Social Security, but they stole it. And since they weren't willing to tell the truth, I decided it was time to leave the parties and to figure out who was telling the truth. And it turns out the Libertarians were.
Well, Robert, if you could tell us a little bit about your background and how that prepares you to take the state's highest office.
Well, one of the things that occurred to me and happened was in 2009, a good friend of mine was laid off. And when he was laid off, I stopped and I asked myself, we had this crash happen in our markets and I was working in the financial services. And I thought, I should know what's going on. And how did I miss this? So I started doing my own homework. This is the one thing I bring to this campaign that I think is above and beyond what either Mary Burke or Scott Walker or even Dennis Fair bring to the table. And that is that I actually sat down and did my homework on what the problems are. Dennis and I have talked a number of times about the problem with the Federal Reserve, but it goes deeper than that. I looked into how we actually tax individuals and what the nature of taxation is. I looked at how regulation actually keeps the small guy out. I looked into what education opportunities would actually benefit society and bring us to that next level of quality education. We have great education in the state of Wisconsin. I think we can still do better. So I did a lot of my own homework. When Mary Burke gets accused of plagiarizing because a consultant wrote her reports, look, I don't have a problem with her buying her jobs plan. She's an executive. That's what they do. They don't usually write most of their material. They give basic outlines and some ideas, and somebody else does the work. It just turns out the person who usually does the work was me. And so I bring that street-level understanding of how things actually operate in these complex systems. And I understand how to improve them for the actual people of Wisconsin, who are, great people, but primarily middle and lower end of the economic scale. And we need to do something radical to begin helping them build the wealth that they should have, frankly, in our economic system.
And just to be clear, despite sharing the same last name, you have no affiliation with Mary Burke, correct?
She's my mom. No, I'm kidding. No, Mary Burke's not related to me whatsoever.
As a libertarian, it seems safe to say that you're in support of less government. What areas of the state government do you think could benefit from being reduced?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would get rid of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We should not be giving private taxpayer dollars to private companies. If these companies decide that they want to open their companies up in Wisconsin, they should do it because we give them an environment that's positive for them to do so, but not because we give them money. We keep giving away these tax credits and eliminating the property tax bills for these companies to open up here in Wisconsin. Look, if it's good for a brand new business to not pay property taxes, it should be good for our existing businesses to not pay property taxes. In fact, it should be good for everybody to not pay property taxes, and that's one of the platforms that I stand on. One of the reasons we have a real problem with the poor in our state is that as long as we have a property tax system, we're always just renting our home. We need to create a system where we encourage the poor to buy a home, pay off the home, and create a stable lifestyle. That's the first thing you do to help the poor. But every year when you wake up and you owe $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, not only that, but an ever-increasing tax bill, that doesn't help the poor. And so I would get rid of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. That's a really big part we can start with. I would do radical reductions, if not a full elimination, of the Department of Workforce Development. You can't take money out of the economy of Wisconsin, send it to Madison so that all the efficiencies of government can be applied to it, and then ship those dollars back out into the state and think that, you know, 85, 90 cents on the dollar is as good as leaving 100 cents in the economy to begin with. That's how you create jobs. You create them by not taking the dollars out of the economy to begin with.
Do you believe it is the government's responsibility to create jobs as a libertarian?
No, the government doesn't create jobs. The government either creates the environment to create jobs or it hinders the environment to create jobs. And it does so two ways. You know, when you have a product that's created, any product anywhere in America or in the world has three input costs. You have the labor input cost, and Wisconsin has great labor. We have a very educated population, and we need to work to continue that. We have natural resources, or the actual hard resources that go into every product. And we have great natural resources in the state, but we have problems. And we can talk about hemp in particular and saving our paper plants if you'd like. But that third input is the government input, and that's our regulatory process, and that is our tax structure. And if we radically reform these, jobs will flock to Wisconsin, and that's what we really need to look at doing.
And there's been a lot of talk over whether or not the state should raise the minimum wage. Would you raise it, keep it the same, or would you eliminate the minimum wage altogether?
In 1964, the minimum wage was $1.25. Now, that $1.25 was actually made of 90% silver. Those were quarters that were 90% silver. Today, the value of those five quarters is about $17. This is what we've done to the purchasing power, as Dennis mentioned earlier. This is what we've done to the purchasing power of our money. And this is what is not only destroying our poor, but it's eroding, deeply eroding at our middle class. And he was right. The Federal Reserve is a significant problem. And while that's a national issue that has to be dealt with, we need to have somebody high enough in government that's talking to our congressional delegation and saying, you guys need to audit the Fed. You need to not only audit the Fed, but once you see what they're doing, you'll get rid of the Fed the next day. I promise you that you'll do that, because they're destroying our wealth. And every time we print money for things like the Affordable Care Act, when we print that money to send money to the states for their exchanges, all we're really doing is sucking pennies out of everybody's pocket and then redistributing it to our healthcare industry. We spend more on healthcare in this state than anywhere else in the nation or in the world. And that isn't to say that we shouldn't have a strong healthcare system, but we don't have an efficient healthcare system. We have a very expensive one, and it's all part of a problem that we have to face. Of government isn't helping to solve these problems. It's actually causing these problems.
And let's see if we can get in one call here before the news. Matt joins us first in Sparta. Hi, Matt.
Hi there. First of all, kudos to Mr. Berg for having the bravery to stand up to both parties and try to make them admit that they straight up stole Social Security. I mean, there's no question about that. So that's awesome. Kudos to him for that. Also, I want to know how he feels about abolishing income tax altogether, state and federal, and replacing it with a straight sales tax. And of course, you would probably have to increase the sales tax to equal the amount of money that is coming in currently, but that way people are not taxed on what they earn and they are only taxed on what they buy. Just curious how he feels about that.
That's a great question. So let me have a paradigm change here for folks that are listening in. All the taxes that people think are being paid by the wealthy are actually being paid by you at the register. If I can change one paradigm in one conversation about taxation in our state, it's that when you walk up to the register, and I like to, this is what I call my Lucky Charms example. When you walk up to the register and buy a box of Lucky Charms, the property tax and the income tax of the farmer is built into that box. And in fact, the property taxes and the income tax of every single person who works in the mill, the ground, the flour, are built into that box. In fact, everybody who works at General Mills, including the CEO of General Mills, who in 2012 made $13 million, his $6.5 million in taxes, that's built into that box of Lucky Charms. You're taxing yourself. So by moving to a sales tax model, what you would do is you would allow yourself the ability to not tax the poor at all. So what I would propose is a two-tiered sales tax system. And this is in some ways built on Maslow's hierarchy. And what I would do is I would tax food, energy, shelter, and clothing at a single low level. And then for our poor, what they would do is we would actually rebate back 100% of their tax dollars to the poverty, and then we would actually graduate it out from poverty to 33% over poverty so that our poor actually aren't paying taxes. But if you go to a doctor today, and let's say the doctor costs $300 to see, $150 of what you pay to see the doctor goes to pay those income taxes. He didn't pay the income taxes. You paid the income taxes. So we have to change how we look at our tax structure and our tax system. I actually want to stop taxing the poor. We tax the poor at the highest level because every product they buy has all of those taxes built into it. And in fact, on Saturday, the 25th, from 8 to 11, I'm going to be in Milwaukee at a community brainstorming conference. We're going to talk about how we help to improve the problems in their black neighborhoods and across the entire city. And one of the things that we have to understand is that they have 1 in 8 black men in Milwaukee currently incarcerated. And part of the problem with that is they can't get competent legal help. Because when they go and sit down with a doctor or with a lawyer and the lawyer costs $500, $250 of seeing that lawyer is just taxes. I want to get rid of those taxes so they can get a lawyer for $250 that is competent. So we have to look at this tax structure and what it actually does to our poor. It doesn't act like people think it does. I want to simplify it. I'll need a fraction of the size for the Department of Revenue in order to administer and to police it. And that's a good thing for not only cost, but for our poor.
We're talking right now with Robert Burke. He's a Libertarian candidate for governor. And you can join in. If you've got a question for Robert or you're wondering where he stands on an issue, you can give us a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Today and tomorrow on the show, we're talking with the candidates running for governor here in Wisconsin. And we've got Robert Burke with us right now. He's the Libertarian candidate for governor.
And if you've got a question for him, you can join in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can raise an issue that and see what he has to say about it. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org.
We turn to our phone lines now and take a call from Nicholas in Mount Horeb. Hi, Nicholas.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask Mr. Burke, if it was the Burke administration that came to power 4 years ago, would he mind speculating on two or three issues that he would have taken on and perhaps done differently than Governor Walker has?
Gotcha, Nicholas.
And I'll take my question off there.
All right, thanks, Nicholas. And Robert, what do you say?
Well, thank you, Nicholas, for the question. You know, let's talk about something that's not being talked at all in this election. And if I had been in the invited to participate in the debates, the televised debates, I would have made sure that we brought this up. I would have turned some corner on this. We need to do a couple of big things. One thing we need to do is we need to nullify the federal ban on growing hemp within our state. We have paper mills that are shutting down. For example, the paper mill in Brokaw, Wisconsin, shut down. 450 jobs were lost, and they have a $4.5 million budget hole in their budget for the city of Brokaw, the village of Brokaw. We need to grow hemp in this state. We used to grow. We were one of the last states to give it up. And we actually have one of the best environments for growing hemp around the nation. And what that would allow us to do is not just to reinvigorate and build our paper plant industry back up, but one of the other things that we can do is it can be used for biofuels. It can be used for food stuff. It can be used for textiles. You can make clothing out of it. This would have, you know, if Governor Walker wants to know where the other 150,000 jobs he promised are, they're right there in hemp. A good fraction of those are in that bill. And the state legislature took it up and failed to actually accomplish anything with that. And that's a failure of leadership from the administration. The second thing I would have done is I would have legalized marijuana. We need to get this done and we need to do it tomorrow. If we're the 50th state, we miss all the opportunity for the innovations that come from this. But there's a more important part to this. We've had a number of large grows that have been busted in the state. Now, I worked as a nursing assistant for 3 years. I worked in a nursing home. I worked in home health care. I worked in inpatient physical rehab. And I will tell you that there are brand new studies out that show that marijuana not only can help with Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, cancer, a whole host of things from a medical side. We need to do this, and we need to do it yesterday. Again, it's a failure of leadership from the administration that they not only won't even consider it, but they don't even consider that this is causing additional problems socially for our society.
And Robert, let me just jump in here. If we look at something beyond marijuana and hemp, is there a third or a different category you want to point to?
Yeah, you know, another category of things that I probably would have changed and taken in a different direction would have been addressing the the tax system, obviously, is the big one for me. My 4-point plan is to change the sales tax, the income tax, legalize, and then legalize hemp is a big part of that as well. Those would have been the big ones that I would have tackled in the first 4 years.
Great. Well, thank you for that call. And looking to education now, do you envision making any significant changes to the state's education budget? And would you support an expansion of charter and voucher schools here in Wisconsin?
This wouldn't happen overnight because the system isn't ready for this level of action. But yeah, libertarians support a fully vouchered education system. And I'll explain why really simply. You know, when I was in high school, I was a D-plus student. I think I finished maybe 320th out of 380 kids in my school. I don't learn on a slow rotational basis of a classroom every 50 minutes. I actually learn in an environment where I can take an issue and then dig deep that I'm really interested in. And when I went to college, when I was 21 years old, when I went to college, I actually graduated with a 4.0 in my major and a 3.5 overall. And it isn't that the public education system isn't serving and isn't doing a marvelous job for many, many students. But you know, there's an old joke that says 50% of all doctors graduate in the bottom of their class. Well, that doesn't mean that they all don't graduate with A's or B's. But in our public education, there is a level of individuals, probably that bottom 20%, who are just not serviced by our education model. And we're not allowing them an opportunity to succeed by denying them an opportunity to seek outside the system education opportunities. This education model was designed, by the way, around the turn of the 18th century during the Industrial Revolution. It was to get kids used to going from station to station like you do in a factory. We're already past the technology revolution. We're into the information revolution. And if we stick to the idea that you have to sit in a classroom 7 hours a day for 50-minute classes, we're missing the opportunity to take advantage of an entire new paradigm in education. And that's what we should be striving for in Wisconsin, to lead the country in what education can be for everyone, which is an opportunity to succeed.
Now, looking at the environment next, you come from the western part of the state where fracs and mining is becoming a booming industry. It's not, of course, without controversy. As governor, would you seek additional regulations on the industry?
No, actually, I would seek a different paradigm in how we deal with the issue. We spend so much of our taxpayer dollars with lawyers and DNR going in and setting standards. Now, the problem with the DNR is you set a standard for water quality, and then they pollute up to that water quality standard, and the average consumer has no, or property owner can't do anything about it because they had permission to pollute that much. What a libertarian would do is change the laws, and we would do what's called pierce the corporate veil. Look, if you want to dig a frac sand mine, knock yourself out and dig a frac sand mine. But if you pollute the property, you pollute the wetlands, you pollute the rivers in our state, I'm going to find the owners of these frac sand mines. I'm going to go after their personal wealth. And if they're negligent, I'm going to put them in jail. But you can go online right now, and you can go frac sand mine fines. And what you're going to find is over and over and over and over and over, we find the mining companies. And the mining companies will amortize those costs out over a number of years, and they'll pass it on to the consumer. You're paying these fines that these companies get for polluting. I want to go after the people who are actually polluting. I promise you, you break the bank of one of these wealthy individuals who owns these mines, just one, the rest of them will clean it up. They won't bother to pollute our lands, and they'll question whether or not they want to dig mines that could pollute our waterways. And that's the way it should be, is protection of property. And we do that by fining individuals and holding individuals accountable.
Now, Robert, if you were elected governor, you'd be working with a legislature primarily made up of Republicans and Democrats, or Team Red and Team Blue, as you call them. How do you envision working with both parties to ensure that things get done?
You know, libertarians are in a lot of ways that great middle ground. We bring a socially liberal ideology. We believe in civil unions. We need to get out of the idea of calling it marriage, and not because marriage has a bad thing for it, but people have a lot of very strong feelings about this word in a religious context. So let's take the word marriage out. Let's stop having a semantics argument. Send it back to the churches. If you want to get married, go visit a church. And let's call it civil unions. Let's make it about protecting property rights. If two men want to buy a home, let's make sure that the home ownership can transfer upon death. If one gets in an accident and they want to make their gay partner their decision maker for their health care needs, these are property issues. And I think that I bring a paradigm, and libertarians bring a paradigm, that we can work on a number of social issues with the legislature to reframe these problems and actually start solving them. Because look at how long it took us to get through gay marriage. This is, we spend way too much time, way too much money on some simple issues. At the same time, we're fiscally conservative. We are going to balance the budget. We are not going to continue to go deeper and deeper in debt. And we're going to do that by reducing the number of things that get money from the government, in particular, private companies that shouldn't be getting private taxpayer dollars.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope I see some folks like my Facebook page. That's my primary tool. Happy to take any questions there. Robert Burke for Governor, Libertarian.
Robert Burke is the Libertarian candidate for Governor. Earlier in the program, we heard from the People's Party candidate, Dennis Fehr. And tomorrow at 3:30, Democratic challenger Mary Burke joins us for a candidate forum. We extended an invitation to Governor Walker, but he was unable to join us.